Welcome to the Declarations of War podcast, everybody. Episode 65. Your host for this evening, myself, Alexei Card, CSM Representative Ali Aras.
Hey, guys.
And the one and only Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
Hope you guys had a great winter holiday break. I know I did. Let's get started on this podcast. First off, I want to give a shout out and a really heartfelt thanks to all the Eve players, even Poetic Stanzel. In fact, especially Poetic Stanzel in a way, who have enabled my League of Legends addiction. This morning, I hit a big milestone. I finally got out of Silver 2 and Silver 1, and I'm now in Gold. I can never go back. It feels great. It took me 3 months. It was really frustrating, but I've met a lot of people in EVE that have encouraged me, and some that were actually really high-level League players that I met through the Mitanni.com that helped mentor me a little bit, so I really want to give a big shout-out to them. And, you know, better late than never.
And I want to give a shout-out to someone surprisingly, Dolan, who was on his holiday helping us get the minutes out and ready to get the minutes out and ready to go. It happened. He also showed up on my space hangout, even though I promised that there would be angry Eve nerds there. So kudos.
Yeah, I was going to give a shout out to all the CSMs that wrote the minutes, because they were actually pretty well written this year, even though it was a little tongue-in-cheek reading every section, basically. But like a shiny new League of Legends badge, they are better late than never.
And real quick, let's give some thanks to our sponsor, Eve Timecode. Buy 14 Eve Timecodes, get one free. EveTimecode.com, where your business counts. And programming note, for our friendly competition over there at Crossing Zebras, they're going to have the owner of ETC, Diana Dial, on their podcast shortly. So I know most of our listeners also subscribe to Crossing Zebras. If you don't, you really should. And Deanna's a really exuberant person. She's like very charismatic, very fun, very passionate about the game. So I can't imagine that will be an episode to sleep on. So make sure you guys go over there and subscribe and catch her appearance. All right, let's get into some poll results. We tried out a new segment on the last episode called Turtle Reviews Movies Alec Won't Watch, where we talked about Elysium. And we put a poll up to see if you guys liked it and whether or not we should keep it. And the results were 39% say hilarious, keep going, 18% I like it, but only sci-fi movies, and 43% said, eh, just stick to the Eve stuff. So even though the majority technically thought it was funny, I think enough of our audience doesn't want to hear it that we probably won't do one, or if we do one, it'll be extremely infrequent.
I refine the idea a little bit. I'm not too dejected by these results, as it was kind of a segment we came up with on a whim, and I think there's ways we could format it that would be quicker, faster paced, and just better and funnier overall. But I do agree, and I didn't vote in this poll now, so none of those votes for me. But I think sci-fi movies are worth the time.
Yeah, I like the segment. It was fun to do. I'm a big film buff, so you know, tying in movie reviews to a podcast I'm already doing is really appealing for me personally. I think, yeah, maybe we'd take some cracks at refining it, and then after a while, maybe try it one more time and see if the reception's a little better. Elysium still sucks.
Soundboards, I figured in retrospect, would have been a great help. Like being able to play soundboards when, like you're talking about.
We just need soundboards in general.
Soundboards are awesome.
I'm putting one together of Jeff Rader from Shodan Kugo. It's pretty intense. It's a lot of like screaming shut the fuck up at the top of your lungs, and well, I don't know if you listen to Shodan Kugo, you know what else is said, but
we also need like just some traditional you know, like drum rolls and snares and all that.
I realized the other day that you could probably FC by soundboard if you really wanted to. Like if you're one of those FCs who just says like warp to outgate. You can replace, aside from like actually being in combat, you could just, you know, do whatever you want and just, along with hitting align, hit a button that just says, all right, align to outgate, fleet warp, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of depressing.
I don't think it'd be impossible to do.
No, not at all. It's just taking the time to put it all together.
Especially if you FC, like, freeze and just say this guy. If you could, like, do a macro every time you broadcast the target, it just cues up the soundboard and primary this guy, then primary this guy every time you hit the target hotkey. That'd be great.
Sure.
Warp over here. Alright, so... yeah, we'll see. Keep an open mind on it. I'm not entirely discouraged, like Turtle said, but, you know, we'll certainly take another crack at it a bit better. EVE news-wise, it's pretty slow month in the galaxy, generally. We already tackled the first half of it. The second half of it was more or less dominated by the Christmas holidays. However, things still kind of happened. The Russians basically ignored the holiday break and decided to continue to push down south, taking advantage of the fact that a lot of, you know, their opponents will probably be away for vacation or what have you. And they picked up quite a few systems, like over a dozen, I'd say, but they're all fairly minor. I mean, maybe one or two of significance, but nothing backbreaking. I think it's an advantage that they're probably going to push for a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if in the next week or two their progress halts again or is slightly reversed. However, there was one major fight, and I have it linked here so we can talk about it a little bit. It was really interesting. A fight in BTAC S-734, the Nulli Coalition in Proteuses, again, rail Proteuses, versus the Russians, known as the DTF Coalition now, and CFC in Tengus and Dummies, respectively. These were rail Tengus, but not the Black Legion unprobable types. They were actually tanked in the mid-slots, but were using railguns, with three magstabs and lows. And the Dummies were full tank, with three omnidirectionals in the mids, and like four drone thingies in the highs, the drone control range extenders. Well, I forget what they're called. Link augmenters, that's the one. And DTF had a significant numbers advantage, like three times the number. And the Proteus fleet just got wrecked. Like, ugh, wasn't even fair.
They did too. It was like, it was almost like they were going for armor hacks in a way, because they were all afterburner fit. They just couldn't get away, I bet.
Yeah, and you know, this is another situation where seeing Nulli rely on these Proteuses, I'm not familiar with an engagement that they've really carried. I mean, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, if one of you two know, or, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some Nulli dudes in our comments being like, no, this fight. But it feels like every time I hear about the rail Proteus, it's in the context of some unmitigated disaster of a fight. Whether or not it's their fault or not, who knows. But it's expensive. Like, these Proteuses are very pricey. And every time they lose, like, one of these ships, the pilots are also losing skill points. I mean, how much can you keep that up?
Yeah, and you never really see them take more than, like, 40k damage either, 50k damage, which... I don't know if that's a byproduct of them just getting blapped off field, which it probably is, to be honest. But, you know, you really want your Tech 3 to be able to soak up a little bit more than that. Because, I mean, you might as well just fly Battlecruiser for a tenth of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really pimp about the fits either, too. It's all like a Tech 2 active armor tank in the lows and a couple of mag stabs for the rails. But, I don't know. All in all, I'm not keen on the Proteus in general, and this fit... in particular, doesn't make me any more so.
I mean, I like the Proteus in general, don't get me wrong. It's just the railgun fit seems a little lackluster compared to, like, the sheer damage output of the blaster fits. And if you're going to do railguns, I think there might be other, like you said, more cost-effective options for you. Like, the EMP Brutix comes to mind. that's a really effective railgun platform for a tenth of the price of this Proteus. Hell, more than a tenth.
Yeah, if the Proteus had a sentry sub, you'd be able to do a Proteus version of the Ishtar, which would be a lot better. You could tank it in a way you can't really tank an Ishtar, and it'd be up there with the Dominix with the sort of signature radius benefits of the Ishtar. But the drone sub doesn't do that, so they're left not really doing that much.
Rubicon in action, too. Just an ass pile of fucking interceptors on both sides now. Basically in every fight.
I think that's good. I think that's actually kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
You had Grath, who's like a super high SP bitter vet flying a malediction in a fleet fight. I think it's fantastic. I kind of want to do it. I love flying at these. They kind of suck in fleet fights because sometimes you can't do much, but maybe in a fight this big, you sort of get lost in the shuffle.
Oh,
and you can
so
feel
funny.
Free to tackle and be a cold sorts of pain in the ass.
I did not notice that at all, Grath and a malediction.
Grath and Jeff. I think that's one of his alts anyway. Could be wrong, but... The Tengus are interesting. I don't know railguns were preferred over heavy missiles for that fit. I'm almost sort of tempted to load up the EFT and see what's what about that, but I'm familiar with the heavy missile version of the tank Tengu, and it's really nice. Like, really, really nice. It's hard to imagine any other Tengu fit outperforming that for flea fights aside from the unprobable snipey one.
Slippery Pete, or whatever that's called.
Yeah. I still haven't tried that, by the way. I really want to. I have a feeling it would be incredibly fun. Obviously, costly and requires like insane amounts of coordination, fleet, and all that stuff. I will probably never be able to do it with NAR. At least,
also,
not for a couple
more Tengu
months.
Pilots.
Yes. Now, not just Tengu pilots. Tengu pilots with Tech 2 railguns.
See, I'm about to be that in like 8 days.
Are you?
Yeah.
Woo-woo!
There was a good A-Lod on TMDC sometime this month, or last month rather, about those Slippery Pete Tengus dying off, and it's one of those examples of a doctrine where, like, every module needs to be exactly what it's supposed to be, otherwise, well, in this case, they turn probable fairly easily.
Well, yeah, because the guy forgot to, He brought ECM of the wrong type, so it was buffing a sensor strength he didn't have on the ship. That's pretty pants-on-head retarded.
Well, there was one, too. It was just, like, a meta over a Tech 2, and that was enough.
Shouldn't be, because it's the same. Metaphor is the same.
I think it was a different mod. I forget which one. Like, it wasn't ECCM, it was something else. Or ECM, something else, I forget.
I'm going to find this article.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I just whipped out EFT. I'm taking a look at this Tengu fit. And I don't know. It's got a little more tank, but not much. And... Yeah, it's got a slightly shorter range with the ammo they had loaded, although I guess you'd go Tech 2 and get longer. It does a little less damage as well. I don't know that I like it. Though I suppose one advantage is, like, almost all of the effective hit points are in the shield, whereas the other one uses the damage control. That's kind of a thing. But that could be changed as well. Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was it takes 3 to be unprobable, and the guys were like switching them out for points and shit. Yeah, that's what it was.
That's derpy.
Yeah, that's super derpy.
Sometimes fits have reasons behind them.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, these rail Tengus are interesting. I guess the appeal is the direct damage from the guns as opposed to waiting for the delayed damage of the missile. But I kind of like the missile's damage projection, raw DPS a little bit better, plus the resist profile is a bit better, at least on the old Black Legion version that I had of the Tank Tengu. But hey, to each his own. Obviously, it's working for Solar here.
Yeah, I think it probably works pretty well with the Dominixes. And I don't think it's a really good example. This is a really good example just because of the sheer numbers advantage, but I think that fit would pair very well with those Dominixes.
Yeah, quite possible. Now, speaking of Black Legion, though they were involved in this fight on the CFC side, they have officially redeployed up north because the major political development of note, Insidious Empire, our friends from Providence, have deployed to Vale of the Silent, or rather just south of Vale of the Silent, to the LOSEC there, and had been harassing Gentleman's Agreement. Gentleman's Agreement had been tasked prior to attacking Insidious Empire and, like, EMP's whole rental empire up there to pretty much prevent them from coming into the theater in the south, which they were largely successful at doing. But now it looks like EMP is going to return the favor by taking them on in their home turf. And the big major surprise involved was that Test Alliance was going to deploy with them, and they had dropped FW, allied with EMP, and they're now called Temp, which I think is great. And they're up there taking it to Gentleman's Agreement. Black Legion had deployed to Gentleman's Agreement space to help them defend, and that seems to have worked, as it doesn't seem like much progress is being made in the Vale of the Silent front.
I haven't been following it as closely due to the holidays, but I also haven't heard of any, like, particularly huge battles that have been going on in the area.
Yeah, same, and that could be because of the Christmas break. That business may pick up. Who knows? I think the interesting thing is that Black Legion's interest is now split between the south and the north, and it'll really depend on what N3 does now that New Year's is over, and you know, they're going to look to really pick things back up on the PvP front, how this interplays in the Southern Theater with the Russians and the CFC not having Black Legion as consistently there. Or if they are still consistently there, you know, what is going to happen to Gentleman's space as they're increasingly forced to rely on their own devices and not so much their allies. Because just straight on their own, I think EMP, and certainly with Test support, has them greatly outnumbered.
Yeah, I am a little bit sad. Like, I hope Test is having fun. I'm a little bit sad to see them sort of jumping back into the big NullSec thing quite so soon. Like, I don't know, you know, if they're... I hope their recovery period was good. I hope that was enough that they needed, but, I would hate for them to stop having fun.
I don't know, NullSec's pretty fun. Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, exactly.
It's pretty fun when you're not in 10% tie-dye. Let's put it like that.
And, you know, if Vale isn't having the huge fights that we're seeing down south, that could persist. But, of course, with Sino chains and whatnot, people can... And, you know, once 10% tie-dye gets started, it's a lot easier to get closer. People can sort of dogpile on anything that's really interesting.
Yeah, there's no such thing as an isolated conflict anymore. We learned that the hard way in Pravi.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to do now? I think they're
like
saving
one of
grace
the nastiest, one of the nastiest byproducts of tie-dye is that you're slowing down time for you, but you're increasing the time for everybody else, really. So just anybody can fucking dogpile on now from anywhere they want.
I think the saving grace is that they're going to have an instance where pilots are on both fronts. Maybe things will be going on at the same time, or maybe those pilots just won't have the time in real life to commit to doing ops in both fronts.
The latter.
That can be the only thing I could think
the
of.
The latter, I think. I heard it described pretty well by, I forget who it was, but EVE Online now, in like the larger block fights, has basically turned into like, what time is downtime? Because you're going till downtime. You're either going right. till downtime now with tie-dye, or you're going to crash a node. And, like, those are basically your two options with big engagements and tie-dye now.
It's kind of a shame.
Yeah, more than a little bit. Well, that's the way it is, though. Now, there's not too much that can be done about it either, if you think about it, aside from CCP further refining the code, but it's just the tendency of EVE players. When you can fit 300 people in the system, they'll fit 350. When you can fit 3,000 people in the system, they'll fit 4,000 people in the system. They're just going to keep taxing the servers because everybody wants to get in on where the fighting is at, because it's easy to travel, frankly, and there's not a whole lot going on. I think EVE combat-wise has probably been more active in the past 2 months than it has been in most of the last year. And even that, I mean, the fighting is fairly localized in terms of the major conflicts. You've got the coalitions all down at one spot. Aside from the stuff with EMP up north, there really hasn't been much distributed conflict. Technically, the conflict down south is going over in a couple regions, but thanks to Titan networks and stuff like that, it's all pretty much the same area.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some, like, max cap of, you know, certainly the peak concurrent user is something like 60 to 80k, something around there. Usually, I see it a lot closer to, oh, I don't know, 30 to 50, let's say. That's how many people are logged on at the same time, 30 to 50,000. So the question is, how many of those people at any given time would, I guess, want to pile in on a fight were it not in 10% tie-dye? Were it, say, in 20% tie-dye, which would be going twice as fast?
Well, I don't know. I'd say probably at least 20% of the population.
As many as the node could handle. Like, I don't think the difference between 10 and 20% tie-dye is really all that great, but, like, I think the limiting factor on your fights now is realistically people recognize that there's only going to be so much the node can handle, which in turn is, like, turned that into part of the meta. Like, you'll hear Pandemic,
right.
You'll hear Pandemic Legion talk about, like, how they don't want to drop supers and they don't want to drop titans, because when you drop supers and then you're throwing out fighter bombers, I mean, they recognize the fact that when they drop their full force, they are probably going to crash the node, and, like, it's just become part of the meta now. So, like, I honestly think that's your limiting factor, because if you could have these stable fights that lasted for a day at a time, you know, then people are going to come, they're going to be attracted and dogpile on, and it's easier now to move through New Eden than it ever has been in the 10 years that I've been playing this game. So, like, people are going to move much more willingly.
You know, one thing I've noticed is that it's also a chilling effect. I know several pilots and even whole alliances that would have liked to have come join in on some of these fights, but they expected the node to crash before they got there and decided it wasn't even worth the trip. Which is unfortunate. I mean, you hate to have, the server's just gonna die, why bother, as the reason people are declining fun in the game.
Yeah, and even when it doesn't die, it still really shifts, like, what you do. Like, the ops to extract people after a fucking tie-dye fight are as big as the fight itself, you know? I mean, it's just, it creates so much chaos throughout.
Yep, and the tie-dye isn't even localized to that one system. You've also had the systems adjacent, sometimes 10 jumps away, also tie-dyed out, which makes, like, spreading the fight out to systems next door not even an attractive option. Anyway, stuff for CCP to think about in 2014.
Pretty much, yeah. It has come up.
I bet. I'm hopeful they find another solution. I know when I was in the CSM a little over, about a year ago, they weren't very hopeful of finding a way to further reduce the lag, but I'm sure there are still some refinements that could be made, and of course hardware is always being improved, so you never know what the future is going to hold.
Yeah, for people that think otherwise, I mean, the bigger clusters like JITA, for example, or when you tell them about a fight in advance, those clusters are running on, like, the best hardware you could possibly have. Like, you can only fault CCP so much for it because they really are at a hardware limitation, and the way they've developed the game and the direction they've taken it in terms of large-scale fleet fighting has just outpaced the hardware development.
It is. I mean, what keeps coming up is essentially they're doing single-threaded stuff. They're not... What's happening in, you know, large companies, Google, Amazon, Facebook, all of them, they get massive computing power by distributing the load around. They have, instead of one really big machine, a bunch of, you know, kind of average machines that you could go down and buy at Best Buy. CCP can't do that because of some design decisions that were made back in 2003. And to use that kind of parallel power, they would have to not just, you know, fix everything that's broken, but completely ground up rewrite the server thing. And that, realistically, isn't going to happen.
Yeah, that was basically my understanding of it, is when they came to the point where they had to decide between single core, multi core, and they made their choice, and yeah, it would require a rewrite of all the base code, and it's just not worth it.
Which leads to an interesting question. Is it going to be, are we going to hit a point where they're going to have to make it worth it, because the player base, if it continues to grow, I mean, eventually we're going to be hitting that cap more and more often. Like, it's not like the problem's going to go away unless like the game stops growing, period. Because if it stays the same, we're going to keep running into the problem. And if it continues to grow, and you would have to think that CCP wants to continue expanding their player base because they're making more money off it, then, you know, I mean, eventually this is going to have to get tackled in some way or another. Whether it's rewriting
Pretty
the
much.
Entire code or not, I don't know, but...
Well, I mean, there's, there's various different projects that have been going to improve it, and I guess if and when those come out, we'll see how it does then.
And just real briefly, not a huge deal, but I was in Jeddah on New Year's Eve, and I wanted to bring up that there was a beautiful firework show going out on the Undock, and not really like earth-shattering Nullsec is shifting Eve news, but I thought it was cool to see, and I participated a little bit. I shot a full load of the, I think they'd be the yellow ones. Yellow or green ones, I forget. But, yeah, people were, like, targeting different frigates, so the fireworks, it wasn't just, like, all on the one particular person. It was sort of spread out in a design, and there were some interesting graphical bugs with all the fireworks going on. Some of them were extremely overbright, and some of them never stopped like exploding. They would just, like, these big orange or yellow balls would just keep going and going and going and going and going and going. It was pretty hilarious.
Nice.
Oh yeah, I don't know if any of our listeners participated, but if you did, cheers to you. Okay, everybody, now we're moving on to contract wrap up. We've got two to talk with you about, and they are just, wow. Some interesting stuff. So first things first, we got hired by none other than Gevlin Goblin, the blogger and financier. And because he had some trouble in his wormhole, he decided to move into wormhole J113820. And apparently the other person that was in the hole, I guess, rubbed him the wrong way, or there was some kind of diplomatic incident where he got locked out of the planetary customs offices, and that was like the last straw for him because he really wanted the wormhole to do PI. So it was like, Yonar, let's do this thing. I want you to come in here. I have this dreadnought built. I want you to escort the dreadnought so it takes down this tower and takes down these Pokos, and then afterwards I'm going to blow the dread up. I was like, eh, all right, whatever. Here's how much it would cost. And you said sure, and began our epic saga of this freaking wormhole. It actually wound up being a huge pain in the ass. So we get in there. First of all, it's a large faction tower. Completely Death Starred up with the option to be a Dick Star. In other words, you could offline the defenses and online some hardeners. The wormhole is a class 2, which means no battleships. Hey, so we have to take down this large tower, large faction tower with battlecruisers and hacks. And yeah, we couldn't even use like the tier 3 battlecruisers, the Oracles, because the tower was too well defended to engage with them. They would just get insta-popped. We tried it once or twice and nearly lost a handful of them. So we said screw that and we used Eagles for the first part. This was to protect his dreadnought because it was shield tanked. He was using a Phoenix. So we're attacking it. It's taking forever. And meanwhile, Goblin and this guy have a conversation in local. The conversation is so outlandish that we have decided to include it as a dramatic reading at the end of this cast. Yeah. So that's going on. Finally, we reinforce the thing. Wait some time. Now he wants to go after the Pocos, but it's nearly downtime at this point. We've been attacking the thing for like 3 or 4 hours. So we take out one of them, then take a break, and it's decided that we'll try to do the rest of the Pocos at downtime the next day. Or not downtime, at prime time the next day. We do this, and let's say about 2/3 of the way through, No Holes Barred decides to make an entrance, and they come through the wormhole, which we had taken to stage 2, but not quite the last stage yet. So they got nearly their entire fleet through, and we're talking 30 Proteuses and Guardians, at least. Might have been quite a bit more, plus some guys from Bomber's Bar, who were in, as you might expect, bombers. I think about a dozen of them. They're all in the hole now, going after Goblin, who had his dread in siege on this Poco. And this is what we're here for. So we hit the tower, we reship, well, not reship, but we refit from blasters to railguns and the Eagles, and we go back to start shooting. Immediately, we realized there were going to be some problems. They have like 10 Guardians, a mix of Guardians and Anirises, but double digits. And we cannot for the life of us break their reps. I think we had 15 to 20 Eagles. And we would come close, like we'd almost alpha through one of the logistic ships, and he'd be at a quarter armor, and then they'd pick him back. Or we'd try one of the lighter cruisers and take it to like half armor, but they'd pick it back up. We tried for this for a little while, and it just wasn't working out, so we switched over to the bombers and popped quite a few of them pretty easily. But it just wasn't enough. Their logi was just too strong. We couldn't break them. And the dread did die. And so they effed off. Then we go back to reinforcing the Pocos. Finally, it's time to kill the tower. And we have no dread this time, but thankfully it's a 25% with what you call it, no hardeners. So we're in our shield ships again. It's Eagles, it's a few Oracles this time around, even though it's hard to keep them up. We figured it'd be worth it for the DPS. And we're shooting, more shooting, slowly wearing down the wormhole. I believe we get it to half structure, somewhere around there. And No Holds Barred comes back again. This time a little bit more clever, considering there's no easy target for them to jump in and warp onto. They bait us with a Drake of the wormhole owner. This guy hits the wormhole, jumps through, and our tacklers, get on top of him. It's like, oh, we got this Drake. Come on, come get him. So I'm like, yeah, let's go get this Drake. Or so we hit the hole. Everything is looking good. Except Drake has friends. First it's a destroyer or two. No big. Then it's like, we're picking up some heavier stuff on scan, so I pull the fleet away from the wormhole a little bit. And then their fleet lands. Again, Proteus's guardians. This time around, they don't get everybody through. They get about half the fleet through. But it's still enough. And unfortunately, one of our Nor Academy pilots who was in a logistics ship warped her logi like 30 seconds late. And warped it right to the FC. So she got stuck in the bubbles that we had put up to defend the wormhole with. And landed not 10 kilometers off these Proteuses, and easily 80 kilometers from us, and she got ripped apart. Lesson learned for her, and a painful lesson for us, because that wasn't the end of it. They had an interceptor that was just running roughshod over our fleet, and despite our Eagles, which have excellent tracking, we could not land a hit on this dude. And the INSEE managed to tackle one of our Eagles, and then our other Logi, which was me. But when he tackled me, and I was like, guys, can we not bring him down? And the Eagles are like, we're shooting him, Alec, it's just not landing. I was like, fuck. Alright, warp off. Everybody warps off. And sure enough, I die. Now, what do you think they would do? A whole bunch of blaster Proteuses. Would they leave like they had before? Would they help this dude rep his tower? What would they do? No, they went and got and reinforced our tower, a small tower, with blaster Proteuses. So ridiculous, but they did it. It took them, like, I think an hour with the blaster Proteuses. Sure enough, they reinforced our tower. But that wasn't it. They left. And the guy's tower was still being shot up, or excuse me, still not being wrapped up. He had like one semi on it. So finally I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Everybody get in Ishtars. We completely reship to armor. Go out there with the Ishtars. And we get back on this thing. And I believe from start to finish, the op was 10 hours long. Might have been 9. I FC'd it and I sort of lost track. But yeah, that's how long it took from beginning to end. I was glad I had nothing to do that day. And major props to all the Nora guys that stuck with me through that op. We had a pretty strong start, and then a bunch of people left in the middle after we had to reship. And then our U.S. time zone guys, especially a lot of the new recruits we just pulled in, like Keeley and Crazier and Dead Knight, they came on and thankfully provided us some much needed DPS, which really made it go tons faster.
I got stuck outside on that one. I've had really bad luck with the contract ops that I've managed to show up to. I woke up and got the jabber ping to get on, went out, was there for a lot of the structure grinding, and then was going to go get some stuff for some other Nor pilots when all the enemy guys jumped into us. Looking at it, it's actually, I looked it up, it's actually a C1, so even worse than a C2 for getting stuff in to hit.
C2s actually aren't bad. It's C1s that are really shitty, because you can't get any more than, what, 20 gigagrams through. C2s and actually the rest of W space are all pretty similar in terms of mass per jump and max mass.
Yeah, it was C1, that's right.
It's just that C1 class just has a ridiculously low jump, or mass per jump limit.
Yeah, you couldn't even do a micro warp drive battle cruiser. Like, it wouldn't let you. I know, because I tried. But yeah, we finally did it. And the butcher's bill. Oh, we killed all the customs offices as well. But the butcher's bill for the tower, let me just get the official figure, was $3 billion for the tower. plus another billion for the customs offices all told. And that's not including what we looted, which included a well-researched Charon BPO worth over $2.5 billion-isk. So this guy really got hit, man. I think he lost in total about 8 to 9 billion, including the stuff that we looted off him. And it made the payout quite nice. Definitely worth it for us in terms of the money that we made off it. And Gevlin was happy. Because we lost his dread on the Poco op, I did give him half the it worked out to about half the money back of the Poco part of it. So we paid him, basically he paid us $2 billion to keep the dread alive, which didn't work, so I gave it back to him. And then he was like, well, could you kill the customs offices for me? I was like, sure, give me that $2 billion back. And he gave it $2 back to us, and then we went and go kill the customs offices. If you want to read all about this contract, feel free to head over to Gevlin Goblin's blog. He does blog about it at length and has some really nice stuff to say about us, which I certainly appreciate. It's definitely an interesting job. I am once again reminded of why we don't do large tower jobs, because they're almost never worth it. This one would not have been worth it if it wasn't for the fat loot drops. They were nice. Very nice. And we're talking like multiple hauler runs of PI materials and advanced products and all that sort of stuff. And it was quite good. I think we looted a Hulk as well. And Gevlin bought it off us. And that's the deal. Interesting contract for an interesting employer. But that wasn't all in terms of interesting stuff. Shortly thereafter, we got contacted by a familiar face. Failed Diplomacy, who you'll remember from the last podcast, and maybe the podcast before that, where we talk about our POCO contracts. They're the guys that attacked our POCOs as allies in the Red vs. Blue War. They went to go take some of our POCOs in another area of space to distract us. And we beat them in a major fleet fight, did like 3 billion isk in damage. And then in our last contract, defending POCOs in Alakur, we took them on in 3 separate fleet fights, where we won the first one, a very small win, and then lost the next 2 for a total of, I think it was 2 billion lost on those. So we came out ahead, generally speaking, but they did take out those POCOs. Not ours, but the contract ones, which sucked. It's the first contract that we failed in a long, long time. And these guys are, especially after the after their first victory, they were pretty smug and didn't have any problem letting us know about it. And then they had tried like attacking some of our POCOs during our defense contract, again outside of the contract area. I think they attacked some of our POCOs and CEO or somewhere in one of the trade hubs that was like easy to find, and they hit it. We defended it. We figured these guys were gonna like keep coming for these POCOs, and because they had beat us those 2 recent times, they were just gonna keep doing it. And we didn't really have an answer for their fleet comp, which was multiple Balgorns, which is like almost impossible to stop, we found in high sec space. But it seems they finally bit off more than they could chew. They decided to attack the Obsidian Front, which is a Insidious Empire-aligned alliance in 00 with fairly large fleets. And they decided that they weren't going to give up these POCOs like so easily, and they brought their 00 fleets into Empire to defend. And we're talking like 50-man Ishtar and logistic support. They reinforced, I think it was over 40 POCOs. Oh, failed. And failed was panicking. They're like, oh my god, what are we going to do? So they contacted us. And my mouth dropped when I got that combo. But their CEO was like, we don't really think we can hold on to all these POCOs. But we want to like... we really want to show these guys that we can beat them. We want to punch them in the face. So I'm like, well, we don't really have time because the holidays to do like a full-on war deck. So that's fine. What I have in mind is we're going to have you guys in neutral logistics. And all you need to do is provide us reps. And our Vindicators and Valgorns are going to do the rest. And I said, you know what? That sounds interesting. Yeah, let's do this. So I quoted him a price. I had to come on their team speak and like assure their pilots that we weren't going to screw them over. Because they were a little hesitant, like after all the fighting that we had been doing, as to whether or not they could trust us to actually help them out, or whether we were going to just like show up in the field and then not rep them at all or something. But I told them, hey, it'd be no problem. We showed up at the appointed time with over 15 Tech 2 logistics ships, plus some Tech 1s, and the guys that couldn't be in Logis, or the guys that had alts that couldn't fly Logis, were in combat ships, specifically kitted out, so that taking advantage of the bug that we had found earlier, where if you... not bug, apparently it's working as intended according to CCP, but it's weird. If you're a suspect, and someone attacks you as a suspect, and then someone reps the person that attacks you for being a suspect, the person that reps them also gets suspect flagged. So this happened quite a few times to some of their guardians, and we had like Newt Legions and I think an Ashimu, a few other things ready to go and just pounce on top of them. And all our logistic ships were packing combat drones, so anything that tried to shoot us, we could pop combat drones out and put them on. It was an epic fight. Epic fight. There is video of it on YouTube. It's a pretty good look. And one thing that was going in our favor was apparently Obsidian Front had us set for our Providence campaign like 2-3 months ago and never reset us. So while several people noticed that we were there, their FC did not. And I guess he didn't process the fact that there is this enormous logistics blob on the field. And it was like, wow, these guys are tanking really hard. I wonder why. And just kept fighting. It was a pretty well-won fight for failed. The only rough part of it was they had an extremely, extremely pimp-fit Balgorn. It was worth over 2 billion ISK. And he had his broadcast set up improperly. So we did not know that he was getting shot. It was the first primary that they had. By the time we figured out who they were shooting, he was already in a quarter structure, and I didn't even think we got a full cycle on him rep-wise. And he dropped. If it wasn't for that Balgorn, it would have been a complete one-sided fight. Anyway, pretty awesome. Much props to Failed. Turns out they were a class act after all. And good fight to Obsidian Front. Check out that YouTube video. I think we're going to put it in the show notes. And yeah. Check it out. Give it a like. And definitely interesting. It's the only contract we've ever done like that. There used to be a mercenary corp called Logistical Nightmare. And that was all they did. It's just nothing but neutral logistics contracts. And it was fun to step in their shoes for a little bit. I can see why they were doing it. It is honestly pretty fun. I would definitely do it again.
Also, just a memo to people who are listening, reset your temporary blues.
Yeah. Apparently I followed up with them because they were upset on the video. Like they thought we were AWOXing them at the time.
Uh-huh.
So I did check with their diplos, and apparently what happened is they knew they were supposed to reset us, and like I think one of the diplos thought the other guy did it, and the other guy thought the other person did it, and so it never actually got done. It was like a miscommunication.
Yeah, nobody audited it or anything like that, or noticed, hey, who are all these blues in system, and what are they doing here?
Yeah, exactly. I think because a couple people noticed that we were there, and the guy that the point of view of the video taker, he had blues on overview, so we showed up.
Sure.
And some people did like mention it on comms, but I don't think it clicked for like most of the fight that we were actually doing stuff, even though we were all suspect flagged, I suspect, based on, I don't know if this was the FC's voice or not, but someone goes, oh my god, Noir's repping failed. Like, I think they thought we were repping them. Or at least a few of them did. And just it didn't click. Because we were suspect, like we were flashing yellow. It's pretty obvious we were doing something. But I think they sort of assumed because of the blue tag that we were helping them, even though their ships were dropping like flies and fields were not. It was close. I mean, the Obsidian Front Ishtar fleet was pretty strong, and because they were using Sentry Drone Assist perfect alpha strikes, they were taking these faction battleships down pretty low before we'd rep them back up. But as soon as they hit like one half, one third armor, or if they were really far away from us and we had to burn in a little bit, about a quarter armor, but we'd just start putting reps on, you'd see like the damage would be like go, 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 and then slowing down and then coming right back up all the way to full. The logistics power of 15 Logi is crazy. I'd love to take that show on the road, tell you what. Anyway, major props. We wound up coming away with 640 in kills, and I read a follow-up post that Failed has since surrendered that war deck, but terms of the surrender was they got to keep almost all of the POCOs that were reinforced. So, pretty good deals all around, I think. And yeah, really cool to see Failed again, and hopefully we don't run into them for quite a while. At least on unfriendly terms.
Noir Academy is now recruiting. We are looking for smart players who are looking to learn small gang PvP in an immersive training environment, in a program designed for new pilots as well as grizzled 00 vets. Learn the ins and outs of merc life, including efficiency and ethics, hostile nullsec survival skills, FCing, and more. As one of EVE's oldest and most respected mercenary outfits, Noir runs a tight ship, but we always strive to have fun doing it. If you want to be part of a high-end merc PvP organization that always strives to be better tomorrow than it is today, Noir is the place for you, and Noir Academy is the place to start. Apply today through our forums at noirmercs.com.
All right, this week in Mercs, we want to talk about some Noir stuff. That's not to do with contracts, but we are doing the Black Mark Awards. It's a year-end award show type thing, and yeah, we're giving it a go. So far, people seem to be pretty into it. It's based on the KATG CACO Awards, KeithandTheGirl.com. Well, probably my favorite podcast, and definitely a flagship podcast like Pioneer Types. And they do a year-end award show, and it's awesome. So we were thinking we'll do the same thing. For our inaugural go of it, we're just going to make it Noir only that can vote, Noir mercenary group, rather. We may open it up to the public at some point in the future. Depends on how popular they get. And certainly if we do, the listeners of Declarations of War will be first in line. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the nominations, because on the next show, we are going to have the winners, and hopefully some acceptance speeches, if I can get them. So, for the first category, we have Community MVP. This is a exclusive to non-Noir people. And the nominees are, drumroll, Kill2, for his raising the profile of solo PvP and being hired to join the balance team, the CCP Rise. We've got Tyne, or Tyen, I'm not entirely sure. He's the guy that ran Nightmare in New Eden. You might remember a couple shows back, we had him as an employer. We talked about that contract. It was really fun, a well-attended, pretty well-planned-out event. And we've also got Xander Fina, host of Crossing Zebras. Or excuse me, Crossing Zebras, as he would say. And of course, he has been nominated for his amazing work on the CSM8 election, particularly his thorough interviews of every candidate, even the batshit crazy ones. Or hell, especially the batshit crazy ones. For best creation, these are like things that people made. Apps, images, songs, videos. We've got the CCP Plex for Good Stream, FleetUp.com, the NOR Academy Student Tracker. It's a tool that we've been using to help improve getting our students pumped through and making sure they're learning everything they need to learn and that sort of stuff, helping our instructors coordinate, and some propaganda posters that people were making for the Alliance in prep for a recruitment drive that we're doing right now. Allie, do you want to take the next one?
Up next, we have as our nominations for we have nominations for Best Declarations of War guest, Matias Otero, who was on before I joined the show, actually, did a fantastic show. Freeze, who we had just a little bit ago after the Providence, the second Providence event. Puppy UK, Seismic Stan with his quiz, and Victoria Stone.
Victoria, a NOR pilot, famous for singing I've Had the Time of My Life on our 50th episode. So good,
nice.
It got a nomination. He was only on for like 5 minutes.
The next one is Best Op. We have the 90Y Station Fights, Delve Black Ops, the Gonditsa Massacre, and No Not Believing in Pizza Time. I am not familiar with the second two there.
Yeah, both of them are before your time. I think before we might have even been on your radar. The Gonditsa Massacre was, I think, took place in January or February of this year. And it was a major armor brawl in LOSEC with, just about everybody was there. Pretty much everyone that was a power in Iridia / Solitude took part in that fight. And it was pretty amazing, all in all. I mean, it had everything. In fact, battleships, triage carriers, bombers bar, I think everything shy of super caps and appeal hot drop happened on that fight, and it's pretty badass, tons of fun, and we got to work with some interesting peoples and interesting alliances on it. I think particularly, who am I thinking, Drunken Disorderly, before they disbanded, they were like the main dudes. Suddenly Spaceship showed up. Unprovoked Aggression was also with us on that one. It was just good times all in general. And it was all over a moon mining pass in Gonditsa. Much fun. No Not Believing in Pizza Time was our first and I think only planetary bombardment contract. And it was fun. We actually had a small, pretty fun fleet fight over the right to control the black or the planetary bombardment beacon thing. So we had to get our planetary bombardment dude in there while killing the other guy's planetary bombardment dude, and then we fought their fleet right after that. And it was a pretty good time.
I think I FC'd that one, didn't I?
You did, as a matter of fact.
That was a good fight. I enjoyed that. I wish we had video of that from our side, because there's video of the other dudes and they're just like,
yeah, major props to them, because I think we beat them in the first run or held them to a stalemate, and then they reshipped and came back, I believe, which is always cool to see. Again, not like a major alliance, just some random dudes that were really making a name for themselves more in Dust than Eve, but they had an Eve side to them, and they also had some balls.
Yeah, in that respect, it was perfect, because it wasn't really an escalating fight. There was two even forces, and yeah, the bigger shit, we were on a stalemate, but we were able to pick off some of their smaller stuff that couldn't catch reps in time, and just pushed them around a little bit. That was a good fight.
Next, we have Most Shocking Moment. Failed Diplomacy, Hygris Noir. Rattlesnake in the Hole, during one of our wormhole contracts. We found a bunch of ships at a save spot, just sitting there.
I remember that, too.
Several of them were unoccupied and were subsequently looted, and I believe, Turtle, you noticed that There was a rattlesnake that actually had a pilot still in it.
Yeah, it wouldn't let me get in the ship, and I just kept slamming trying to get in there, and I was like, wait a minute. It's targetable. I can approach it. There's a dude in here.
So you and I'm blowing it up. And it was like, what, 4 billion-esque or something crazy?
Yeah, there was a couple, like, it was that rattlesnake, there was another faction ship and, like, a hauler. So there was the that German's contract, wasn't it? Training those dudes?
Was it? I thought it was the next wormhole contract after that. Weren't we taking down a POS or some POCOS at the time?
Yeah, I don't remember. It was a while ago.
The other one was a Snake Loki. That's what we're calling it. We were in Dell doing Black Ops. And one of our drops was on a Loki. And there was nothing special about the Loki's fit. Which, much to our surprise, when the killboard total clocked it in at over 4 billion ISK. Turns out, he had a full set of high-grade snakes, not in his head, but in his cargo hold of his not-interdiction-nullified, not-cloaky Loki that he was moving through Dell. Oops. And finally, Sensational, as the top FC of our condemned and convicted corp, which only left us a couple months ago, he got mercury poisoning this year and was out of action for quite a long time with that, nearly died. So that definitely got a nomination for most shocking moment.
How the hell did that happen?
We're still not sure. He's not sure. It's not like he swallowed a thermometer or something like that.
Sure.
So all of a sudden he got hit with it and nearly went blind. Had to get several surgeries. That was a pretty big deal. And he only recently came back a few weeks ago.
Alright, next to we've got the 2013 Pilot of the Year. Slightly out of order. Deliter, Nahaj Greb, Pepe Ezer, and Zirali Onzo. All four fantastic more members who I've enjoyed working with. All four awesome. I'm not sure what more that I can say about that. I'm way out of order.
That's fine. Part of the artwork. And right. I think the interesting thing about this poll is it's like it's the most hotly contested. They're all within a few votes of each other, which I think speaks to the strength of all the nominations. I think they are really amazing people. Deliter, Greb, and Pepe are all directors, and Zirali is the CEO of Yggdrasil Woodchoppers, which is our sister corp.
Next one I'll take is Fail of the Year. The votes, or the options so far are Black Camper jumps into Shadow Cartel. I assume this was in the Capital event that happened when Of Sound Mind and Noir worked together in Molden Heath.
No, actually.
Really? Okay.
At least I don't believe so.
I'm going to look at this killboard link. So I thought it was.
I'm looking at it again. It might have been, yeah.
Yep, that's us.
Yep, that's the one.
I feel bad about that. I was one of the people who was all like, oh, it'll be fine. What could possibly go wrong? And I just hadn't thought, if I'd thought for like 2 more seconds.
Yeah.
Sinos would not have been lit. We also could have put it on something other than Rethel's Thanatos.
Yeah, I'm remembering that up now again. I believe I was sort of FCing, but June was FCing more on the cap sound stuff, and it was your op, so she was like, let's drop caps, and I was like, well, I guess it's your call. And
yeah, I remember that.
I really should have been like, it's Shadow Cartel, let's not do that. But I didn't, and yeah. We lost everything.
And I was sitting there, and I was jamming things in my Falcon, and I think I said something on comms, and I could have just been like, aren't those the guys who dunk people with small, like, carrier and dread groups?
Yeah, aren't they, like, one of the best capital projecting low-sec alliances in the game?
Hey, yeah, maybe.
Take a step back, bro.
Don't.
So that was bad.
That was bad. That was pretty bad.
I don't know that it's Black Camper being bad so much as a lot of different people being bad. McBarnacle's shuttle. This is the one we talked about recently where if you look at the killboard link, it is in fact a Megathron, wasn't it? It was a battleship.
Yeah, it was a Megathron. He undocked his battleship and managed to go a full jump in it, dying to red versus blue on the second, like after the jump. Managed to go that entire way without realizing that he was in a battleship, because he thought the whole time it was a shuttle. And that's what I had asked for, because we were going to go reship in Vegeta. So it's like, everybody, undocking shuttles. We all undock and go. He undocks on the Megatron, warps it to a gate, jumps through the gate, and dies to red versus blue. I can't understand, but yeah. Definitely a worthy fail of the year.
The next option is Noir Mercenary Group in the Alliance tournament. Yeah, that happened. And then the... although, to be fair, I can't, like, add Sound in here, but Sound in the Alliance tournament has a couple of good moments for fails. And the last option, and the one that I personally voted for, is Noir's web hosting.
Jared's gonna be so mad if that one wins.
It's been down so often.
Yeah.
It's just, we're on an op, and then TeamSpeak crashes, and we have to get on the different TeamSpeak, and you can't look up the kill board or any of the information on the op, because it's all on the website. You know, in an organized place where people can get to access it.
It happens at the worst times, too. Like, just as No Holds Barred jumps into the wormhole, or just as we release a new podcast. That's when it crashes. Fucking goddamn. It's not even our fault. You know, we have another company that hosts for us. And Jared CO1 is our manager. You know him from the staff page on declarationsofwar.com. He's our web dude, our web guru. And he likes these dudes apparently because of their customer support. But they just can't run servers, man. It sucks. It just sucks.
No kidding.
So I think we got some free months out of it, but they still deserve a pretty hefty Fail of the Year award. Finally, we've got two more. Recruit of the Year. We've got Crazier793. He's a dude that we just picked up last month. I'm actually going to name him the December Employee of the Month. Not because he, like, did something super amazing, like made a corporate program or was director or anything, but he's been going out and soloing. But not just soloing well. Like, going out there and actually killing some ships. And he's been doing well enough, frequently enough, that he's been picking up two or three other people now to go with him. And just really taking it back to the small gang roots that Nor used to do all the time. But has become increasingly difficult, just due to the nature of the game. So major props to that dude. We've got Leoso Catalan. I haven't pronounced his last name right. But Leosos are... He came up through NAR Academy, graduated, became an instructor for them, became a dust correspondent for the Mitanni.com. He's FC'd, he's run classes, he's a trader for the Nora 1K program. He's really just, he's been all over the place. So major props to him, definitely a worthy nominee. And finally, Horuk. Was another dude that was in Noir Academy and then has since graduated. Horuk was interesting in that he had some director experience prior to joining Noir Academy, and he parlayed that into pretty much becoming a mentor for a lot of the other students, especially the ones that came in after him. Eventually he became an instructor before he even graduated. Then he graduated, stayed on as an instructor, and he's really been helpful in streamlining a lot of the administrative processes of NAR Academy to help, you know, the people that agreed to do that part of the alliance spend less time, you know, forum posting and managing stuff like that, and more time doing classes and recruiting and stuff. So very cool there. And our last category is Best FC. I was nominated, not by myself, hooray. Aikyo 58. Ninja Turtle, you got a nomination for your work on No Not Believing in Pizza Time.
Hey, no shit.
And Sensational. I think probably on the back of his work with the Delve contract, but he was just generally a good FC all around when he was here. Probably one of the best non-noir FCs we've ever had, him and Sweet Julie. So yeah, that's the category. Those are the nominees. We'll let you know the winners on the next podcast. Hopefully we'll be able to get some words from the people that win, whether it's live or pre-recorded or whatever, who knows, but we are going to try to get that, like, you know, mini acceptance speeches. And have some familiar faces back on the podcast. It'll be fun times.
Is it just noir people that are voting?
It is noir and Yggdrasil Woodchoppers at the moment. I just didn't have the time to get it, like, fully set up to really handle public voting and, you know, be willing to commit to going through and stopping Goonswarm from stuffing the ballot and things like that. So, because it was the first time out, and because you're still working things out, just decided to do it all internally. But I did want to tie it into Declarations of War and make it sort of a thing. So, it's been popular enough internally that we're almost certainly going to do it next year. And I can't wait to bring you guys the results of the awards on the next show. Allie, CSM segment. The minutes.
Fucking finally.
Yay.
Hallelujah. Etc.
How good does it feel for them to finally be fucking done?
It's like a mixture of good and bad. Like, it's... You can't take... It was a train wreck process getting them out, and you cannot take that back. You know, it wasn't great for a lot of different things. It wasn't great for the CSM sort of public image or what have you, but they're out now. They're actually out, so people can do what, so people can look at them. You know, one of the sort of, I guess, few advantages to them being out this late is none of the Rubicon stuff is NDA'd. So you can look back and you can see what CCP was thinking about sort of the core features of Rubicon as of the beginning of September and end of August, beginning of September. And you can see what the CSM, and specifically what individual CSMs were thinking about it back at the beginning of September. So there's that. There's the one session that I'm super happy made it out. I wrote this and I figured that it was just gonna, like, get cut and just die. Was Eve Economy number 2, session 5 on the list. And that session was, so what happened was we came in after lunch and Dr. Ao came in and was saying, so we have 2 hours to talk about the EVE economy and the Plex market. We're not going to use those 2 hours, but problem. That I'd like to talk to you about once we get done with the actual business. So we spent an hour on the EVE economy and the Plex market, and that's an interesting conversation. It includes some sort of tidbits like PvP activity is up and missioning activity is down. So for people who are like, EVE is a Care Bear world dominated by Care Bears, the numbers aren't so much saying that. Wow. At least not missioning characters.
Not missioning, but manufacturing is still the biggest sector in Neve's economy.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
And but incursions and wormholes.
Manufacturing is always going to be a thing.
But, I haven't actually had a chance to read through them all because I only found out they got published a few hours before the show. But I do have them queued up in my tabs. It's probably the first thing that I'm going to do tonight if the podcast is over. Or at least certainly I'm going to try to finish them before I go to bed. I'm pumped to read them.
There's some cool stuff in there. I mean, like a lot of it you read and you're like, oh, well, we already know this. Or it's like really vague details on all the things we know all the specifics about. But like the two economy sections are pretty good. The security section was pretty good. So there was still some stuff.
The security section was just straight interesting.
Like, they said that there was 12 personal deployables they're looking at in total. Give you that number.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen them talking about, like, they opened up that public brainstorming thread, and they're talking about sort of future deployables already.
I think the number is interesting because I knew from that thread they were thinking about doing more of them. But I didn't realize it was like double digits more, in that there's probably going to be a lot more variety, maybe even some innovative variety to these things that I hadn't really considered. I thought they were just going to do like two or three more of them, and that would be the end of it.
Yeah, the number is like oddly specific because we never really heard him peg a number to it. So like, I don't know if that's a ballpark or if they really just
have
like...
I imagine it's a ballpark.
Like spread away 12 spots for it.
But yeah, the session number 5 is, it basically ended up being like player retention. And so it was CCP talking to us for an hour about how they retain players. And so in there, you know, we talked about, you've got a lot of people who come in and they sort of just do like missioning or just do mining or something. They don't really talk to anyone and they don't really do anything else. And those are sort of what you think of as like the typical high sec Care Bear. And they leave. They come in, they do that for a little bit, they leave. People who come in, they do more. Not necessarily PvP, but they do more than just one thing. Those are the people who tend to get really engaged and stick around. You know, people who come in and all they do is PvP also end up kind of coming in and coming out again. Presumably they drop, instead of for the next theme park MMO, the next, you know, multiplayer PvP game that comes around. So it, you know, it was kind of an interesting look at like who, what do players do, what, like, what things do players do, and then we heard a lot more about this both at the summit and in a later meeting, and that sort of deeper detail is NDA'd. But it's an interesting problem, and it's especially interesting thinking about, you know, how, what newbies learn how to do and what newbies come in, and whether or not they find themselves getting super engaged in gameplay. And the answer is often not that much. And that's kind of CCP's big problem. And so we spent a lot of time talking about whether that's like a social problem or a, you know, a knowledge problem. Is it that people just don't have, is it that it's hard to learn the game and hard to pass on knowledge about the game? Certainly there's a lot of oral culture. You know, I know what I know about Eve because I talk to other people who know things about Eve. And sometimes I find out that the things that I know about Eve are wrong because the people that I talk to are still working off of data from like 2008. But it's this really fascinating thing. So that was, I think, one of my favorite sessions. Let me think what else was interesting. It felt like there wasn't a lot of NDA. Who got NDA'd that was interesting? Dust stuff got NDA'd. And there was my own personal triumph of the summit was there was something that was like, there was a lot of discussion about a feature that is NDA'd because it is not being released. Because the CSM heard a proposal for something and went, that's a really bad idea.
Always nice to have those moments.
And then it didn't happen.
Is the CCB heard it and then said no part actually in the minutes?
CSM heard it and then said no? Yeah, that's... I'll find the exact quote.
Because I think all too often they're... Like, we had a few of those type things when I was in. And it's frustrating to, like, the players like, yeah, like, you wouldn't believe some of the ideas we heard, and, like, to have these go through the reality check is invaluable, sure. And then people eye roll like, yeah, right, CSM doesn't do anything.
Alright, Sonic Lover moved on to discuss, Sonic Lover? I'm not sure how his name is precisely pronounced. Moved on to discuss an additional disruption feature. This feature was shelved due to CCP and CSM concerns expressed during more satisfactory solution could be found.
Sweet. The system yes. worked.
Exactly. There's a thread up on the forums. I did a hangout, a space hangout sort of special edition last Thursday. There's a thread up on the forums following up on that, basically talking about what, what does the community get out of the minutes? Because CCP Dolan and CCP in general are looking at how to make the minutes process better, how to make it more effective at informing the community in a way that's timely and doesn't chafe everyone's butt, basically. Because the minutes are a huge amount of work for both the CSM and CCP, and so it's one of those things that you want to look at and you want to see if there's any low-hanging fruit. If there's anything that we could do to improve the process as it stands. And there's been some interesting stuff. I will link the forum thread that should go in the show notes. I need to write up basically the minutes of that space hangout. It's been the holiday sort of ate me for a bit, but now I'm back in business.
Yeah, a lot of people suggested the court stenographer type thing, but we actually did try that in CSM7, and it was awful, frankly. Because there are a lot of EVE-specific terms that get thrown around, and if the person that's recording has no idea what they are, what they produce is sometimes just best guess, unintelligible gibberish. And then what winds up happening is you have to go back and redo them anyway.
Yeah. What CCP Dolan's proposal in the Hangout, and I think there are upsides and downsides to this, is instead of having a stenographer have basically fast-typing CCPers produce a bare-bones draft, a draft which is then reviewed and fleshed out by the CSM. The main objection to that is basically, well, CCP is writing it and it's the CSM's thing. How do you know CCP isn't going to, like, basically prevent the CSM from getting their information out? And in response to that, CCP already can and does do that. The CCP has, it's released by CCP. We're under an NDA from them. We could, in theory, just say, we could in theory decide that we were going to release them, and forget CCP, but that's really the nuclear option. So whether CCP writes them first or the CSM writes them first, I don't actually see a big difference as long as there is that CSM review step. It's not like I mean, CCP could, I guess, just publish them without asking us. But I find that unlikely in the
extreme. That would be their nuclear option, and I don't think the community would sit with that.
The community wouldn't, the CSM wouldn't, that would be the end of a process which they get something out of, and if they didn't get something out of it, they would just stop it already.
That would be a huge embarrassment in the media.
Oh, yeah. No, that would be... many fires would be lit under their ass.
I don't think that's a terrible idea, especially as long as the meeting is still video recorded. So if there's some dispute over, well, CCP wrote it up one way, the CSM remembers it different, here's the actual videotape of it. Can we make this a little closer to reality? That kind of thing. As long as that's there, as long as CCP review or CSM review and approval is there, who does it really matter who writes it first?
Yeah. And what that would give you, the other thing that was talked about, which is, you know, so obvious, you kind of wonder why we didn't have one already, is a style guide. Being able to have that written up would mean that, say, CCP, there would be kind of a draft at the end of the meeting, and so the CCP in the meeting could sign off and say, yes, that happened, that happened, that happened, that happened. I don't want to talk about this. That happened. And then at that point, what it is it's not this whole approval process. It's just individual CSM members fleshing out an outline from the videos, which is going to be way less work for the CSM members. And importantly, it puts the big onus of reviewing. It sort of front loads the NDA thing. So CCP can go through the NDA while they're already there and they haven't left yet. And then,
most importantly, while you're face to face with them and they can't put you underneath a pile of other papers.
Yep, exactly. And then it puts the onus on sort of video review and detailed review and quick return on the CSM, who have proven themselves better at it. We got minutes back from CCP Dolan. I was tweeting about it. It was the week of the 18th, 19th. We had a draft back in his hands after a weekend, was how long it took us to take the CCP revisions, go through them, do some cleanup, not enough, but, you know, we did some cleanup on, like, grammar and typos and names and stuff like that and formatting, and then basically packaged it up, and I've been, you know, Dolan has sent it back, and I've added the last couple of revisions in and republished it each time. And that's been a very fast process, because it turns out the CSM is motivated to get the minutes out, and the CSM is made up of people who have sort of already opted their free time into the process, not people who, you know, are getting something out of the CSM, or they wouldn't be coming to summits necessarily, but who have other shit to do with their work day, and for whom this isn't their hobby. This is my hobby. I do it at home after work, or I would if I had a job. But that particular kind of craziness is not present in all of the CCPers who need to sign off on the minutes. So I think that has a lot of potential. It retains the format while avoiding the stenographer thing. There's a couple of, you know, in terms of the format and the style guide, there's a couple of interesting backs and forths on the hangout and some stuff in the thread. So I really, really, really strongly encourage everyone in the community to who's listening to this podcast, who cares about the CSM, to go in there to take a look at that and to post, because this is, you know, this is your chance to have a direct influence on the process of democracy to come. And this is in particular a place where I will be taking into account and conveying community ideas in a way that I wouldn't normally. I'm not, you know, looking for... It's not about what I want or what I think is best as much as it is actually what is serving the community best in this case. And I mean, it's that way for pretty much everything, but for this, even more so.
All right. Well, it's good that they're finally out and this is all over for us.
Yeah.
At least until the Winter Summit, when you have to do it all over again.
Hopefully
some of these reforms that we're talking about are going to be in by then.
That's the plan. And if not, having been through this set of minutes, I know exactly what I'm going to do for the next set. And it's not just write them better. I now know a lot more about when and how to get things moving.
Mm-hmm. All right. Talking about our sponsor real quick, Eve Bet. www.evebet.com, eve-bet.com. New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real-life sports and esports with ISK, and of course WinISK. They've also got blackjack and slot machines and that sort of thing, but to me the main draw is the industry standard odds they've got, so you can bet on NFL playoffs, LCS. I know I'm going to be betting on possibly both of these as we go, because my team, the Philadelphia Eagles, haven't made it into the playoffs for the National Football League. It's American football for all you Europeans out there. And LCS side, I've got a couple teams I'm looking at that are looking really good. TSM, Cloud9, XDG, which is formerly Vulcan, and the brand new team of Evil Geniuses NA, featuring three of my favorite players. And that's going to be some pretty good times coming up probably pretty soon. I think the season will start up in the next month or two. So get yourself an account on eve-bet.com and start throwing some money down. So we got a dramatic reading for you, which I'm going to entitle Get a Move On. This is between myself, Gevlin Goblin, and the owner of the wormhole, Zoe Data, however you want to say it. So it's long, but it's good. It's really good. So I'm going to play myself this time around. We'll have Ninja Turtle. Why don't you do Zoe Data? And we'll have Allie do Goblin.
All right.
Subspace communication beacon unreachable. Channel list unavailable.
Hey, Zoe Data. I think you should negotiate an exit.
Don't know. I bet a lot of people would want to kill Goblin's Dread.
I bet a lot of people would care less than you think.
A lot of people don't want to mess with Nor, so you're out of this hole. You can negotiate an exit, or you can lose everything inside.
There's not much to lose.
1 billion just the faction tower.
Plus, I can't trust you when you already lied to me.
You can trust Alexeyev Card.
Lol, trust a merc. Okay, ..
I can access a third. Oh, shit. Oh, by the way, for all Zoe Data's lines, if you can replace a word with a letter or misspell something, just assume that he's doing that. I can act as a third party for whatever deal you two agree on, if any. I do it fairly regularly.
The wormhole is not worth the dread you built in here. Never mind what you're paying these guys.
Apparently it is, lol.
You'll see in the blog why it's worth it. Again, you can still walk away with your ships and tower if you just offline it.
Not worth it because I can just put another tower here. What you gonna do, hire mercs every time?
Fingers crossed!
Why would you bother losing towers? After we destroyed all your current assets, you won't really be in the position to be more than nuisance. So the smart thing is to accept peace and leave with your assets.
Didn't say it would make sense. More to make a point. What I don't get is why this action, when I even offered to open up the customs offices.
You aren't really in the position of making a point. Also, my goal is not your tower, but the Pocos. I now destroy them, place my own. You can't really attack my Pocos, because I can easily pop your ships. After that, your towers can be ignored. And no, you didn't offer it.
Sure I did. Your response was that you were I'm guessing that's disillusioned with the wormhole life.
It's probably supposed to be, yeah.
If you keep a log at very end of our convo.
You wrote you wanted to build a dredge, you started paternalizing after you realized I'm somewhat famous. You locked me out of the Pocos and did not respond to mails.
You never mailed me. You mailed my inactive corp leadership.
I mailed the corp contacts. How could I know who's the person in this hole? You were never online.
Killboard for starters.
There was zero kills for a month in this hole! You were inactive.
I'm sure you looked further than a month.
Why are the listed contacts for your corp inactive? That's something your corp should fix. Can't expect people to do killboard analysis anytime they want to talk to you.
You were inactive. Just stay that way. From now, you have two options. Leaving with your faction tower and ships, or leaving with nothing.
Besides, even if you were active on the killboard, doesn't mean you're in your corp's leadership and can make decisions.
The title board member kind of gives it away.
Because corp titles matter. Not like everyone has a dozen.
So, to find out that you'd be the person to talk to, someone should disregard your corp description, check your killboard for active pilots, and then do an in-game info check for each one to figure out which has the most likely title for a leadership person.
Anyway, as your shields are going down, your window to accept my offer is closing. It's closing.
Like I said, you're not trustworthy. Even if I did accept it, it's not like I'm going to move all my shit out in 5 minutes, especially not with those bubbles.
Alexei Card is respectable, and I can take the bubble down instantly.
You're not making any sense. If you were after customs offices, why are you attacking the tower? And I did say you're welcome to stay. You can spin it on all you want to make me out as the bad guy.
Yes, I'm welcome to stay without Poco access, and your tower is needed to prevent you from building a dread in your extra-large factory.
Hey, Goblin, if you were to use a non-large tower, would that address your concerns?
I'm welcome to stay in my wormhole? What a nice guy you are.
It's not yours!
It's been mine for 2 years.
It says unclaimable on the top left corner. Fountain was test for 3 years, and now it's not. Again, you're free to leave with your stuff, and I even pay for your Pocos 100 million each. Or you can make a point and lose all stuff.
Why can't we coexist? You see, I'm not very active here. You can do the combats, mine, whatever.
Because you locked me out of Pocos. Our lovely talk will go to the blog, where you are as patronizing and dismissive as it's possible.
I didn't lock you out.
Really? You don't have standings with Zephyr Corp, says the Poco.
The Poco was always only open to Corp.
So you did lock him out.
It's not like it opened then I closed it. It was always closed. Sorry, but I never heard of him.
Lol, what?
He was even CSM, the most famous Merc Alliance leader. I knew you were inactive in Care Bear, but this is wild.
Yeah, I've been elected to CSM twice, the host DeclarationsOfWar.com podcast. I'm a pretty famous Merc Alliance leader, not the most, of course.
Alexei of Card Eve, 97,000 results, or 9,700 results.
I fulfilled over 250 mercenary contracts and plenty of third-party shizzles. Frankly, I'm kind of offended you've heard of Gedwin Goblin and not me.
So it looks like you're not going to let me move my stuff.
Why would I? What do I gain from it besides sitting here for some more hours? Not like I'm in need of kill mills.
Redemption? So far you've been nothing but full of shit. That and not worrying about my scanning alts here.
Why? I didn't even know you until you convoed me. I thought it's an empty hole.
Your merc's gonna go sooner or later.
I will take Pocos. After that, how do you take them back? With scanning alts? I want the Pocos. The tower is only shot because of its X-Large factory.
You and I both know I'm of no threat to you. Need more than a dread to take down a Paz.
But you could take down the Poco. I want the Poco, not the tower. Look, you don't play here anyway. Just go.
Didn't need a dread to take down a Poco first time.
If you weren't inactive, I wouldn't have moved it in the first place.
I was doing PI, exactly what you're gonna do.
You know of the show Other Characters Colonies options? I checked the planets and saw like 3 colonies. 58%, you have 8 more to change your mind.
I told you already I would move out. I'm not offlining my stuff because I'm not stupid.
So we should let you leave with your stuff and leave your tower in full combat effective.
much good my fully combat effective tower is doing. Like I said, I can always scan my way back in and set up another tower.
But not full of materials in our extra large factory. I know how hard and how many jumps a new dread means.
Don't need a dread to take down a Poco.
But everything else can be popped in PvE ships. 7% left.
Okay, how about this?
Also, I'm somewhat grateful since you made my girlfriend play Eve for more than 30 minutes at once.
I'll move the extra large assembly out first.
And you can re-anchor it any time. The mats are the big thing. They can even be in large containers. The offer is simple. You offline the tower and we don't touch you leaving. I pay 100 million for every Poco you sell me. No other offer. Take it or blow up with everything.
So I'll show you I have no mats in here.
The offer is simple. You offline the tower and we don't touch you leaving. I pay 100 million for every Poco you sell me.
Just read that.
No other offer. Take it or blow up everything. It's repeated.
Yeah, he says it again.
Oh. Oh, my bad.
But if you move out your hangars, you already moved out everything.
Not ships. Look, you're worried about me building something here, so I offered to move it out. Not sure what else I can do.
Thing is, you can always re-anchor
it. That's my line. Oh, thing is, you can always re-anchor it.
But I would have to move all the mats back in.
Large tower would give you that ability.
You might already have a dread, and it fits into a ship maintenance array. Sorry, offline tower and we don't touch you. 4% left.
You know, I'm sure we could work something out, but it doesn't sound like you are serious at all.
I built a dread and hired mercs. I'm pretty serious.
And I told you I'll move out, but you rather me stay here, then so be it.
You were just waiting to buy time. You're not offering anything. How about this? We go shoot NPC customs and remove the bubbles, give you 2 hours to remove ships and valuable stuff. Then offline tower and move that out too. 53%.
It's 4 a.m.
Then why are you doing here online?
Because I'm dumping stuff. You're not getting a shiny kill mail.
Question mark, question mark, question mark. What kill mail?
Kill mail.
Kill mail of what? We'll get the tower kill mail and the hangar dropships now. When we blow it up, we get kill mail for everything inside. 52%.
Whatever, dude. Brain is fried at this hour.
51%. Be smart.
So you're going to let me move out, or do you want future problems?
I let you move out. You get 2 hours to move out ships and stuff. That should be enough. And I buy the Pocos.
Can we do this tomorrow? Well, not tomorrow. It's already tomorrow.
No, just now. We don't give you time to get mercs and move out PvE assets.
Gatamar is, so.
Okay. I can get mercs after I move out. I don't see your point.
Without tower, you don't have dread equals no threat.
Could always plant another one.
But you can't move in the mats for a dread overnight.
So you're going to take down the bubbles and stop shooting?
Yes, we stop shooting if you start leaving. But first, sell the Pocos, please, as an act of goodwill.
I don't have those kinds of powers. Roles, I should say.
Kidding? Then you have nothing to offer.
So you can't even offline this tower anyway. You are hilarious. And there we go. There's someone begging and pleading and talking in circles so much. Turns out he couldn't even transfer Pocos, offline the tower, or do any of the stuff that he was talking about anyway. This is basically an enormous waste of time. If we were doing anything but sitting at the tower shooting it for like 4 hours. What a character, man. Alright, that's it for episode 65. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. Leave a comment or put in a donation. Grab yourself some sweet Declarations of War merch at welovefine.com/eve. You can reach Noir via our public channel, Cafe Noir. Apply to join us or Noir Academy during our massive January recruitment drive on the forums at noirmerch.com. Happy New Year, everybody.